We're live.
You're live now.
Okay. Good morning and welcome to the January 10th, 2012 San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Would you please rise and join us for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, could you read any changes to the agenda, please?
Amended items to consent. Staff is recommending item 8 be amended to correct the description of Exhibit A to read tax defaulted property descriptions. Secondly, staff is recommending item 10 be amended to add attachment 2, vicinity map, which was omitted when the document was originally created and attached. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you very much. And this is our first board meeting of the new year. And before we go to our reorganization, I know that we want to wish all of our citizens a happy and healthy new year. And hopefully this will be one of great success and great comfort for all of our citizens and certainly all of our friends and family. So with that, I will go to Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Chairman, with thanks for your service over 2011, I would nominate Mr. Patterson as our chair, Mr. Teixeira as our vice chair.
I would second that motion.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Gibson and seconded by Supervisor Meacham to nominate and Mr. Patterson as chair and Mr. Teixeira as vice chair. If there's no further discussion, I guess we'll do a roll call vote on that, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Look at all of us reorganizing we have to do.
Wait a minute. I didn't realize you were going to be sitting here now.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's that iPad.
I poured you a drink, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
We may well need it before the year's over. I want to thank my colleagues for this opportunity to serve as chair of the board. I appreciate that. And before we proceed, I would like to take a moment to present Mr. Hill with this plaque with an embedded gavel so he can no longer use it. But I want to thank Adam personally for the work he's done as chair of the board. It's a huge commitment and investment in time to represent the board. You're all over the county talking to people about the things we do. You've been very engaged and
We got so much done, you know, and sometimes that gets lost in a variety of things, including, you know, people who depend solely on media outlets to get their news, which is often not all that complete. But I was very proud of our board's hard work in doing things like we were able to pass two utility-scale solar projects in single-day hearings, which they've already begun to provide hundreds of jobs, local jobs, and they will eventually be constructed to provide 800 megawatts of clean renewable energy. I was really proud of my board, again, unanimously supporting, endorsing the economic development strategy that is ongoing with the EDC and has already been something that's led to some tangible results in the community, and proud that we saw process improvements led by Supervisor Meacham underway that helped to form a business assistance team. Certainly, hats off to all of our employees because, again, this year we were able to ratify more agreements on pension and compensation reform, which would not have happened if it were not for our excellent employees. So we continue to make great progress with that. I think we have most of our employee unions agreeing to the new system. We were able to close yet another year of budget gaps. Very difficult for our departments to do so, but they continue to work together very hard. We were able to close these budget gaps without layoffs. And that also is a testament to our employees. They have continued to make concessions. Our bargaining units have continued to make concessions to save jobs and to work together to make the organization run as smoothly as possible. A lot of other good things. We're able to do all of these things, you know, and we become more aware of the success of our organization and how good our employees are when we go to the CSAC conference, the Association of Counties. And we realize that a lot of the problems that other counties are experiencing are far, far worse and far more challenging than the ones we are. We're able to do these things and still make sure that we meet our citizens' priorities on public safety, to go forward on important infrastructure projects. I know that the Nacimiento project is going to be completed this month. The Willow Road project is into its second phase and will be is continuing ahead. The Los Osos sewer project is going to begin this year. We were able to work very successfully with the sheriff and the probation officer and others on a variety of important issues, ranging from the new women's jail to realignment. And we are extremely pleased with the collaborative effort we have in our public safety leaders. We also have been able to make great progress on seismic safety issues. Supervisor Gibson is now serving on the independent review panel for the seismic studies being conducted around Diablo Canyon. And that, I think, is really important for our citizens. And so there's, you know, I could go on, but we have done a lot of things that I'm proud of, is stepping up and helping citizens, helping with funds for homelessness, helping as much as we possibly can in these difficult times, helping our tourist industry by beefing up funding for the VCB. I mean, we've done a lot. That sometimes isn't always the sexiest stuff for news coverage and such, but I'm proud to be part of a board that understands that we can keep our house running very well in a fiscal sense, but also not just do the things we should do, but continue to take on new initiatives and new challenges that improve and enhance our community. And so I'm extremely grateful for that, and I thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to, just before I get to you, though, because they're all sitting here, and they won't talk to me or give me anything to eat if I don't. For us, at least, and certainly for me, we would not, and I think all my colleagues would agree, we would not be half as good at our jobs, if we're any good, if it were not for our legislative assistants. My legislative assistant, Susan Devine, you know, when you're chair, the legislative assistant has even more work to do. She's wonderful at handling constituents, wonderful at handling requests, wonderful at working with people. She's extremely resourceful, bright, and always happy person, and certainly that I owe a lot to her. Vicki Shelby from District 1, a terrific and experienced legislative assistant. Sherry Espiro from District 2 does a terrific job for Supervisor Gibson. Deb Gieslin, who has swiftly recovered from some surgery because she's so dedicated to her job in helping Supervisor Teixeira, and Amy Gilman, who does a wonderful job for Supervisor Patterson. So on that personal level, we thank you. We also thank our board secretary, handy with the camera there, Susan Baker. And with that, I will shut up finally and turn it over to our chair.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hill. I appreciate those comments, and I'm glad you introduced our legislative assistants, because I concur we wouldn't be half as good as we are without them. And I know most of the people in the room financially by employing several hundred people for the next few years. We've also got a guarantee from those companies over that time for $21 million in sales tax. So that'll come in incrementally over the next few years and help us balance our budget. And as Supervisor Hill mentioned, we've been successful in balancing our budget due to the commitment and hard work and sacrifices, really, of all of the county staff. We put a process in place in the fall of 2007, seeing this coming, knowing that we were going to have to make cuts. We've been successful in reducing the overall cost of county government while still maintaining essential services. And it's been a partnership and through collaboration with all county employees that we've been successful in doing that. So our thanks go out to you, and we hope that you'll continue to work in that cooperative manner in the future. Things looking into 2012, we have a number of items that will be coming forward that we hope to complete this year. We've got our EnergyWise plan that was adopted several months ago that we'll continue to implement. Actually, that'll take a number of years to implement, but we will continue to move forward with that. As Mr. Hill mentioned, our economic development strategy that Supervisor Meacham and Hill worked on with over 100 business people in the community, that was adopted this past year by the board. But going forward, we will be working with a subset of that group and representatives of the Chambers of Commerce in the county to redraft our economic element of the general plan. In fact, there's a meeting scheduled this Friday to start that process, and we hope to get that project completed within a few months. On the planning front, we will continue to work with the applicants out in the Carrizo, developing those solar projects, which are so important not only to our county, but to adding clean energy to the grid throughout the western United States. We hope to, through the utilization of funding from those projects, increase our public safety presence out in the Carrizo and on the eastern portion of the county. We just started staffing full-time the Cal Fire Station in California Valley. Sheriff Parkinson will be increasing the sheriff's presence out in California Valley and will be providing better protection to all rural residents out in the eastern part of the county, which I'm very pleased to see happen. Also this year, we'll be working with the housing builders, the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast, who've been working with us on the plan improvement process with Supervisor Meacham, as well as other people in the construction industry, to develop a plan development ordinance, which will help us develop the county in ways that are strategic, that will put development where resources are available, and they've been collaborating and working with us to develop this ordinance that will better facilitate that. From Public Works, we've got the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin management plan that we've been working on the past year and hope to get that adopted and implemented this year, working with stakeholders in the North County who rely on the Paso Robles Groundwater Basin for their water supply. A very important project that is involving government and the private sector and municipalities to ensure that we have adequate water supplies in the North County. Also, we'll hopefully be concluding our countywide master water plan this year, which will take a look at all of our water resources countywide and move that forward to better protect and utilize our local water resources. We want to continue to collaborate with all of our partners in addressing the homeless issues that have been exacerbated by the downturn in the economy. And I'm looking forward to chairing the Homeless Services Oversight Council and creating a collaboration where we can improve our services to the homeless. Realignment that you've all heard about and that we've dealt with over the past year will continue to have to deal with. I want to point out Probation Chief Salio and Sheriff Ian Parkinson, who've worked very hard to ensure that we're prepared to deal with the realignment of prisoners coming to the county out of the state prison system. And that'll attrition over time. And they're at the forefront of it. Over to our County Administrative Officer, Jim Grant, who's going to talk about our annual report, our second annual report. We unveiled that program in 2010, And we have the 2011 annual report up on the website. I do see that Supervisor Gibson wants to make a comment, so we'll turn it over to him and then go to Jim Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to add one thing to our to-do list. We have two communities in this county who have been extraordinarily energetic in raising funds for new library branches. Mm-hmm. That would be Atascadero in your district and Cambria in mine. And this is the year that is going to happen. You spoke of the constraints of state budget funding and the general economy, which has led us over the years to a policy that communities will be asked to contribute half the capital costs of these library facilities. But it is, to me, extraordinary the energy that we've seen in both Atascadero and Cambria. And we look forward to being able to take those votes later in this year that will actually start hammers being hit against nails and new libraries being put into place.
Yes, thank you for pointing that out, Supervisor Gibson. We actually have an item on the consent agenda later this morning authorizing the contract for the Atascadero Library, and I will be speaking to that. Also, I just want to point out, I just received request to speak for him on the reorganization from Mr. Margetson. What I'd like to do, Mr. Margetson, is finish this piece and then ask you up to speak to this item. So, Mr. Grant.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Patterson and members of the board. My name is Jim Grant, the County Administrator. And this morning, I think it's a great opportunity after all the comments that the board members have made about the services the county provides and where we're headed into the future to unveil our 2011 annual report. The idea behind the annual report is to really connect the public with the county services and to inform and educate on what kind of services we provide. And it really is quite extraordinary, the amount of services we provide. We have 22 departments ranging from public safety to health and welfare and a variety of in-between services. And it's really hard to grasp, really, the amount of services that we provide and the good things that I think that we do in the community. So the idea behind this annual report is to just give some general information about what the county does, what we've done, some of the good things we've done, where we're headed, and how we connect with our public, and provide some interactive items in here so they connect with the cities as well. So the report is 100% local and organic product. All the information was provided by county staff, and county staff created and edited the report. County staff, the main creator of that is Penny Verziaga. She is right over here from County Admin. She is really the creator behind this and the brains behind it. We have had other folks in the administrative office do the editing as well, but county staff from other departments provided the information. No consultant services and very little paper products were used in the making of this annual report. It's intended to be an online report. There will be no paper copies. We did one paper copy for the clerk only. So if you'd like to see it, you'll need to go to your computer to do that. So with that, we're going to do a little test run of the report today and give you some of the highlights. And I'm going to turn it over to Penny. Penny, please take it away.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning, everyone. Penny Berciaga, County Administrative Office. And I'm pleased to take you through our 2011 annual report today. You can access the report on our county's website at slocounty.ca.gov. So we'll go ahead and click on the link there. I'd like to bring your attention that there are two ways to view our annual report. We have an interactive document in Adobe Flash, and if your system or mobile device does not support Adobe Flash, we have a PDF version. And for your convenience, we also have a Flash player, and you can also download the Adobe Reader right there. So let's go ahead and go into our interactive annual report, and we'll enter here. And I just want to show you a few ways you can navigate through the report. You will notice at the top that we have forward and back arrows, so you can go through the report that way. You can also flip the pages, which is kind of fun. like a book. And we also have a top navigation menu, which has each of our functional areas, which we will be going through. You can also navigate right there on our table of contents by clicking any of those pages to view those. I'd also like to, and we have a picture of our board and our board's mission statement. And on the next page, we have our Board of Supervisors areas. So if you are not sure what district you live in, we have descriptions of each district here. And you'll notice that you can scroll over each map, and it'll show you show you the map of each district. And next, we'll go into mission, community-wide results and values. Here you can read about our expanded definitions. For instance, our community-wide results are a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. And our organizational values are integrity, collaboration, professionalism, accountability, and responsiveness. So we encourage you to read about those. Next, we'll go into our organizational chart. And this is yet another way to navigate our annual report. You'll notice here that we have our functional areas, land-based, and so on. So you can see the departments under each of those functional areas. And you can click on any of those links to view that page. Next, we'll go to County Seal. For those of you that are history buffs, this is a great way to check out our county's history. You'll notice that you can scroll over any part of that seal, and you can learn about our county's history, as well as the rich history behind our county seal. Next, we'll go into About Slo County. And we had this page last year, but we found it very helpful because right here you can access all of our city websites, such as Paso Robles, Atascadero, San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Arroyo Grande. So next, we will go into our redistricting page. And we recently completed our redistricting process this year, so if you would like to read about that process or view those maps, you can simply scroll over those maps for more information. And on our next redistricting page, I'd like to draw your attention to the GIS online mapping software. If you have not viewed this software, it is absolutely amazing what it can do. It's software through our planning and building department. And you can look up business information for any area of our county, look up partials, and even generate demographic reports. And it does much, much more. So I encourage you to check out that software. Next, we'll go into solar developments. And here you can view a map of our solar developments, and you can also, there's a link there to our planning and building website, so you can read extensively about both of those projects. We'll go ahead and select land-based. And here is a typical menu that you'll see under each of those functional menus, which will have the departments listed. In land-based, we have our Ag Commissioner, Planning and Building, and Public Works. So let's go ahead and go to Planning and Building. And here is our page setup is pretty much the same for each department. We have a what we do section. So if you are not familiar with the services provided by our departments, you can simply read that description. And to make our annual report a one-stop shop, we have provided the contact information this year, more than just the website. We have included the address, phone number, website, and any kind of social media links that the department may have. So let's go ahead and go to our Public Works. And I'd like to point out here that we have Did You Know boxes throughout our annual report to give you fun facts. And on this particular box, we have information about our county roads, which is pretty incredible that we have 1,325 miles of roads in our county. So next, we'll go to the next page. There you go. I just want to point out that we have added some videos this year, so if you don't want to read about the Nacimiento Water Project, you can watch a video right here about how we are providing water for future generations. Next, we have our public protection functional area. And under this area, we have our county fire, child support services, district attorney, Office of Emergency Services, probation, and our sheriff. So let's go ahead and go into our sheriff's page. And I'd like to point out here that we have a reverse 911 link. If you have not signed up your cell phones for reverse 911, you can do so by clicking on the site. It'll take you right to our sheriff's website where you can do so and also view their sheriff's Facebook. So next, we will go into Health and Human Services, the events and services for our local veterans. Next, we'll go into Community Services. Under this functional area, we have the Farm Advisor, airports, golf courses, parks and rec, and our libraries. Let's go ahead and go into our golf courses. And if you are ready to tee up, you can actually do that right here from our annual report. I would like to bring to your attention that there is a new golf course blog, which you might want to bookmark this if you're a golfer. We have information on maintenance practices, local events, wildlife sightings, and much more. And we also have Facebook pages for our Morro Bay Golf Course and our Dairy Creek Golf Course. So let's go ahead and go back to Community Services, and we'll go into our libraries. I want to bring your attention on this page to a directory of our library locations and hours. So if you're looking for which library is near you, you can simply click on that link to check that out. And we also have a video here that you can view. On our next page, I'd like to point out that our libraries are expanding. They are expanding in Atascadero and Cambria, many thanks to our Friends of the Library. And we have a directory of our Friends of the Library right here, as well as a Facebook, so you can stay connected about their growth right here. Next, we'll go into fiscal and administrative. Under this functional area, we have the administrative office, assessor, auditor controller, clerk recorder, and the treasurer tax collector. Let's go ahead and go into our clerk recorder's office. And I just want to again note our Facebook and Twitter links for our clerk recorder. Here you can stay informed about election information and all the great services provided by our clerk recorder. Next, we'll go into internal support. And here we have County Council, Fleet Services, Information Technology, and our Human Resources. Let's go ahead to go to Human Resources. And for those of you who would like a career in public service, you can simply click here on the job openings link and see what job opportunities are available right from our annual report. Next, we'll go into our countywide financials. I'd like to note two charts here. We have sources of revenue and our property tax dollars. And especially, I'd like to note our county's excellent credit rating that you can read about right here. On our next financial page, we have expenditures by major category and expenditures by our functional areas. We also have a Did You Know box because we want to draw your attention to our final budget, which is online. Many folks don't know that this is out there, and if you are interested in any of our department's budgets, you want to check those out, you can do so right there by clicking on that link. Next, let's go ahead and run your own county. And I'd like to bring your attention to this game because it's provided by iCivics, and it's called Counties Work. So if you would like to try your hand at balancing a county budget or even running for office or even getting ready reelected, you can do so right here. I want to bring this to the attention of the educators in our community because this is a great way to get our kids and our youth involved in county government or just let them know about civics. And for your convenience or if you're interested, we have a partial list of where our money goes so you can compare how you spend your money with with our list right there. Next, we'll go into our awards. Many of our departments have received national, state, and local awards, and so you can read about our innovative services right here. I'd like to just draw attention to our Auditor Controller's Office Award, because it's pretty amazing. They have received the Excellence in Financial Reporting Award for the past 25 years. And so, you can read about all of these awards right here. I also want to note that we sent out a press release yesterday to all of our media. We are sending out a notice today to all of our employees to let them know that this report is available. And, of course, our annual report is available in all of our county libraries online. I'd like to take you back to our county website under the 2011 link and show you here the annual report evaluation. We invite everyone to complete this survey and let us know what you think and what you would like to see in next year's annual report. We want to produce...
Outstanding job. I know last year when you kicked this off, I know that all of us on the board, I know myself, tried to explain to the public ways to get access to information for the county. And that was an incredible job that you did. And all I can see is just improvements on it. And amazing job. If ever a proclamation was in order, Mr. Cameron.
We can do those. Supervisor Gibson?
Yeah, just what they said. in particular, seeing how it's evolved has been great, Penny. Thanks so much.
And for those of us who are book junkies, and, you know, we spend way too much time in front of the screen as it is, the computer screen, not the TV screen. I appreciate the feature where you can turn the pages, so I at least feel like I'm reading a book. Penny, thank you. Tremendous job. And slocounty.ca.gov, check it out. It's awesome. With that, we actually... Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that. Mr. Teixeira?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, and I'd like to just chime in with everybody else. I think it's an excellent job, and being the new man on the board last year, it was a great help to come. I don't see how anybody got by without the report in years past. So my kudos to you and your staff and everybody involved, and reflect the comments of my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We actually do have a couple of requests to speak, one on the reorg, Mr. Margetson. And then one on the annual report itself. Mr. Brown, if you'd like to come forward now. We'll start with Richard Margetson and then Mr. Brown. And I apologize, Richard, I didn't find this until after the fact, but I'm sure you'll have the opportunity.
Richard Margetson, I'm just curious as to the process for picking the chair annually. Is there actually a formal process to this? And the reason I bring this up is you were all elected democratically by districts that represent, supposedly, if redistricting is approved, the same approximate population. Why is the rotation of the chair not equal? And why is Mr. Teixeira's district, the 4th district, now put off again? And I'm going to give you the history of who's been the chair from what districts. 2006, it was Cacho, District 4. Mr. Lenthal, 2007. Mr. Patterson, 2008. Mr. Gibson, 2009. Mr. Meacham, 10. Mr. Hill, 11. District 3. District 5, which was Lenthal after Cacho. And now Mr. Patterson again. So it will be two rotations of two districts being chair before the 4th district is represented again. Not that I'm anxious to see any of you chair. I'm just saying, is there a process? And if this is a democratically elected board, the chair should pass democratically. This will mean that Mr. Teixeira, if he takes over next year, this will be a 7-year lapse from 2006 to 2013 before that district's represented again. And in the meantime, two districts have been represented twice. Thank you.
Yes, well, that's an interesting observation. I'll speak to that. Typically, the protocol at the board is, and there's no formal policy, it's an unspoken policy, but historically, since I've been on the board, what we've done is gone in numerical succession. However, when we have a new board member come on, we'll skip over that person, obviously. We don't want them to take the chairpersonship until they've had an opportunity to actually get their feet wet. And that's why you see the numbers out of sequence. Mr. Teixeira was asked when he came on board, as was, I think we did this again earlier when Mr. Linthal and I know Shirley Bianchi and Cacho had a discussion with Mr. Linthal about the succession. But his normally we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But when we have a new person, we change the order and then go back and forth. And that's why that was done the way it is. Mr. Brown.
Thank you. Mike Brown representing CoLab. Your new annual report, certainly one of the most elegant graphically and technically reports around. I used to collect them. And this thing is outstanding, and I don't know what you intend to do, but you might put it in for a CSAC Challenge Award. I would think at that luncheon it would be stunning if they would give you the award. Trying to context data. So how many parcels are they? What are there in the county? What does 56,000 mean, and what does 47,000 mean? And you do have performance measures in your budget document. So if there was a way in the format, and I realize there's room space problems in any report, to integrate the performance measures in over time and just have a bar or something, or maybe it's a click down since you have that capability, so that the two documents interrelate. So here is this end of, you set out to do things in the budget, and at the end of the year, here are all these things somehow that we did. The other thing is, and I don't know where this goes, but in addition to being an annual report, it could be some kind of front end to the services. Maybe there's more than it becomes a front end on the county web page. I think that there's a great opportunity here to integrate performance in a non-relativistic way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. With that, we will move on to the consent agenda, and I do have some requests to speak on items on consent. Gwen Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. We heard this morning an announcement of cutting of funds from the state and federal government. Are you, as a board, not setting up a precedent to allow a business that promotes a area specifically to obtain money from this county? There are a number of chambers of commerce throughout the county that will be coming into you and asking for money. This precedent could even follow over to the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. They bring in tourists from all over the country with their announcements regarding what is going on, how to get there, where you can stay, all of the amenities that are necessary for a tourist to enjoy themselves. For this board, with the condition of the finances that we have in this county, to allow even this to be on the agenda is ludicrous. And if you approve this, you are setting up a process that you will find it is going to come back and haunt you. Please do not allow this money to specifically go to one organization or one area. Los Osos, I'm sure their Chamber of Commerce would love to have some money, but I don't see them on the agenda for that funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ms. Owen.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. Glad to see everybody again. It was a nice break. I'm very concerned about setting a precedent and would like to know how often this goes on to give an amount of $63,000, almost $64,000, to a private marketing company on advice and request from the Cambria Local Area Advisory Board to give the Cambria Chamber of Commerce money to redesign their website. What does the county's funding have to do with setting up an individual Chamber of Commerce website? And if you're going to give Cambria $64,000, I would hereby request that Los Osos get the same amount. We are about to have a sewer project that is going to destroy our city for 3 to 4 years. We have broken down streets because you've deferred maintenance on our streets for 3 to 4 years. Our city, our town, is very much needing a website redesign. And we could certainly use, maybe you could split it with them. But it is ludicrous, absolutely insane in this time of cutting corners to hand out money to Cambria's Chamber of Commerce. Either give it to every Chamber of Commerce in every community so they can all build websites, so they can all get tourism, or please drop this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Dean Benedix.
Yes, good morning. My name is Dean Benedix, the Public Works Utility Division Manager of San Luis County. Request this morning to pull consent item number 14 with no action so that staff can bring it back to the Nacimiento Commission to review details associated with this program. This item is an amendment number 4 in the amount of $106,000 to the T.J. Cross Consulting Engineering Firm for additional quagga mussel prevention program support for the Nacimiento Water Project. The item was submitted as an extension of the existing program and the work efforts that have been going on for the last basically 2 years, consistent with the approved budget of the Nacimiento project. Some questions regarding multi-year program details with private ramps that surround the lake have developed, and we believe that it's appropriate for us to review those.
I hope, and probably will, bring in more tourists to the Cambria area. One of the local area funds is Los Osos Morro Bay, unincorporated area of Morro Bay, and they have a local area fund. Off the top of my head, I can't tell you how much money is in their fund. They do have a local area board. They work with the CBIDS administrative officer, Cheryl Cumming, and to meet and then decide on how to spend that money. I'm not quite sure, again, off the top of my head, where the local area for Los Osos Morro Bay unincorporated area is. I do believe they do have a board in place. I'm not sure if they've met yet to determine how to spend their funds. But certainly that is an opportunity for the Los Osos Chamber of Commerce to get together with that local area board out there to come up with a way of making their website better. But that would be the local area's advisory board's decision.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Did you have a question?
Yeah, if I could just to clarify, Nikki, the funds are, in fact, the funds that are collected by the hoteliers and the vacation rental owners on the bills, and that's where the money comes from.
Right. The assessment is 2% on a night room rate collected by the county tax collector and put in a special fund, and so that's it's no general fund dollars, none at all.
Right.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mr. Gibson.
I would only add that the institution of this business improvement district was at the initiation of the hoteliers who participated. Is under their control. The county is only acting as the agent in this instance.
Yes, there's an advisory board. There's a, I call it the mothership, the county CBID advisory board, and then your board established 7 local areas. And so then each local area has an advisory board who determines how that money that goes back to the local area will be spent. And so this is just one way Cambria felt that they should spend their money.
Okay. Ms. Smith, Supervisor Meacham has a question.
And this kind of relates a little bit to the annual report. Is do we have an periodic update in terms of how much money is in each of those area allocations, how much is spent, how much remaining?
There's an annual renewal. The Business Improvement District was created by an ordinance,
right.
And the ordinance requires an annual renewal, and that'll start to come up in April, May. And at that time, there's a whole annual report that's given, which shows how the money's spent. However, the monthly CBID advisory board gets an update on how much the financials are. And then the local area board also, when they meet, gets an update of how much money is in their fund and how much money has been spent.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And also there, if you go to winecoastcountry.com, there's a member site, and it has all the financials. It has all the minutes and the agendas from not only the CBID advisory board, but from the local areas.
I guess I was looking for is more for the means by which folks in the public could access information to understand how the CBID works, how the allocations are accomplished, and if the annual report would be able to put that annual report would be put in conjunction with the counties or as a link, at least then they'd be able to have an opportunity to see that. Just a thought.
Yeah, we'll take a look at that and make sure that we get the most information out there for the public.
Because just as a follow-up, and this isn't for you, Nikki, but I know that in my district there's been a couple of little communities that have asked for funding to help with their websites. I've kicked in a little bit of discretionary money, but we got Cal Poly to come in and help do that for a very, very, very low, if no cost at all. And they did a great job for them.
Great. All right. Thanks for that tip. I'll close public comment on consent and bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues if they have any items they'd like to comment on. Supervisor Gibson?
Briefly on 8 and 15 together.
8 and 15?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Hill?
No, thank you, sir.
Mr. Meacham?
Briefly on 14.
14? Okay. And let me find you here. Mr. Teixeira?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll start with Mr. Gibson. Items 8 and 15.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Items 8 and 15 are related actions to retain 8 tax-defaulted properties from an antiquated subdivision that looms over the community of Cayucas. And this is a long-standing program that the county has undertaken so that these tax-defaulted lots, which as they stand right now are not developable, can be retained and working in partnership with the Cayucas Land Conservancy. They are slowly accumulating a significant piece of the greenbelt around Cayucas. I just wanted to thank the Treasurer Tax...
...to commend Parks and the ARC Services Division of General Services for working to save money, complete this project, which will help Parks, again, better maintain facilities in the North County. It was much needed. They were spread around over the North County. Here they're able to centrally locate all of their equipment and have offices in one place to more efficiently serve the county. So thank you there. And item 10 is the contract for the design services for the Atascadero Library and the North County County One-Stop Service Center, which will be co-located with the library. It's been an ongoing project, and finally we're going to get to the construction drawing phase with hopes of beginning construction by the end of this year and completion of the project and moving in by the end of next year, which is also a Tascadero centennial celebration. And Grinda Ernst is in the audience. I want to personally thank her, point her out. She is the president of the Friends of the Library. They were challenged with raising $3 million for this project, and they have almost successfully completed that. They have enough money on hand to begin construction. So as soon as we get the design drawings done, we'll get underway. Brian Reynolds, also the library director, is in the audience, and it's really been a true collaboration and a project that's advantageous to the North County residents, because it'll keep that one-stop service center in Atascadero, and admin, general services, ARC services have all been working very closely together to make this project a reality, and so this is one step closer. So thank you to all. And then we have, let's see, item 14?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate Mr. Benedict pulling this item, and I want to make sure that we understand this is in no way making any kind of a indication that we're not as concerned about the issue of clogged mussels as we need to be. I was reading an article this morning, just for example, the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California spent $4 million last year and a total of $30 million so far to try to eradicate the spread of the quagga mussel. This is becoming one of the most costly issues that are relative to providing safe water to the state of California. So this in no way minimizes the concern about this, but I appreciate having the opportunity to take this back to the commission to take a look at the contract. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a motion for consent.
I would move approval with item 14 removed.
Okay. Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda as amended with item 14 pulled. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
To clarify, who is my second, Meacham or?
Mr. Meacham.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. We'll move on to our presentation calendar. Madam Clerk, would you read that item, please?
It's actually public comment.
This is yours.
Submittal of a resolution recognizing Cuesta College's Tutoring Center on its 40th anniversary.
Move to approve the resolution.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the presentation. Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. And I've asked Supervisor Meacham to read the resolution.
I've asked Mary Hastings if she'd come up to the podium, please, from Cuesta College. You know, earlier you mentioned we don't look at the screen all the time from an educational standpoint. I think Groucho Marx said it best when he said that actually TV is a good educator. As soon as you turn it on, you can go in the other room and read a book. It's my privilege to read the following resolution. A 1970 Cuesta College accreditation report recommended that the administration and faculty of Cuesta College become actively involved in the tutoring center and include a salary director, time for faculty participation, initiation of a course on tutoring techniques for interested students, and documentation of and follow-up programs on tutors and tutees. Whereas in the fall of 1970, several Cuesta College counselors and faculty members active on the campus affirmative action committee took a proposal on the need to create a formal tutoring center to the San Luis Obispo County Community College Trustees Board of Trustees. And supervised by Marsha Munson, who would go on to serve.
Yes, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's an honor, and thank you for this acknowledgement. And I appreciate that you recognize my predecessor, Marsha Munson, who created this program. And as you said, we have supported tens of thousands of students. In addition, we've also given many, many hundreds of students the opportunity for employment as tutors. And for a number of those students, that was their first job. and I'm happy to say that some of those former tutors are now instructors at Cuesta, are working in offices across the campus, and we're really proud of the accomplishment we've done, and I am glad to bring something positive forward from Cuesta. So thank you very much for this acknowledgement today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Cuesta is an important member of our educational community. With that, it's time for public comment on items not on the agenda. So I'll open it to public comment, and I do have a number of requests to speak, starting with Mr. Eric Greening, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening. Two topics. First, hydraulic fracturing, fracking, about which I've been trying to get your attention since August. This involves the underground injection of toxic fluids to loosen deposits of oil and gas, and our Monterey Shale could be the next target. There's already fracking in Santa Barbara County. Their supervisors didn't know it was happening until local ranchers brought to their attention the operations on their own property. Now their board is creating an ordinance to regulate this activity and protect their groundwater. They are trying to get ahead of the curve. How about us? Do you even know whether this may already be happening in our county? Not just I, but the Water Resources Advisory Committee is trying to get your attention. You should have received our letter at least a month ago. I asked at last week's RAC meeting if there had been a response, and no one was aware of any. We agendized for next month the possibility of trying again to get your attention, but we hope you will make that unnecessary. Support for agendizing the item at the RAC was overwhelming, even among those more predisposed than I to trust the industry. One raised the concern that the industry being regulated should be at the table where decisions are being made about how to regulate it. My glib response was that was how the county always did things, but I realize now that I can't be so sure, which brings me to topic two. Last month, I brought to your attention that you were scheduling a hearing to adopt a truancy ordinance on a school day when the population being regulated would be shut out of the process. Criminalizing the use of public space at certain times by an entire age class of people is a pretty heavy-handed regulation. None of the committees that have created this thing have included the affected population, and now you plan to adopt this thing in their absence. Would you do this to the frackers or to any other regulated group? Please reschedule next week's hearing for a non-school day. Otherwise, you are teaching the young by example that you don't value participatory democracy. Do-gooder adults may say we have to do this in a hurry to show we care about the young. I say this rings hollow. If we cared about the young, we wouldn't be year after year disinvesting in education. We wouldn't be leaving them with trillions of unpayable debt on an ecologically looted planet with a destabilized climate. At the very least, we would protect the groundwater they will depend on by regulating the fracking that threatens it. Topic one, topic two. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Tacker.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos. I've passed out an opinion piece that was published in the Cal Coast News at calcoastnews.com. It mentions what I came to your board last month to talk about, and that was the reduction of interest rate for the state revolving fund loan. What the piece does not go into is what I want to talk about today. There are 11 low-interest loans for Los Osos, 9 of which add up to $83 million with the USDA loan providers at 3.2% interest for 40 years. The other two are secured by the State Revolving Fund, for a total of just over $69 million at 2% for 30 years. When we went to the State Revolving Fund last year, in original negotiations, we were asking for $86 million. That principal amount was reduced through some grants that were obtained and prepaid assessments. So now we're down to $69 million. Reduce the interest rates. None of these monies have been let. Both of these agencies are negotiable. You need some hard-hitting evidence that I think you can get from a decent economic impact study that analyzes the true effects of the project for our community and our county. And you can do a better job for Los Osos. And I ask that you do that.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. The fable regarding the sinking of the ship, the Montebello, was corrected by a businessman and fisherman with a letter to the editor as it was not fact the way it was originally reported. This has been going on in other instances, and this is a report to you, which I'm sure every one of you are aware of. And the fable that the citizens of Los Osos voted against the sewer when it could be paid for by the federal government, that septic tanks are polluting the estuary, that the nitrate problem, the saltwater intrusion, and the basin water problem will all be addressed by the new sewer system. These are fables, not facts. If they were facts, they would have proof. The continued repeating of fables by governmental agencies because of their standing does not in any way make it a fact. Just because you say it does not make it a fact. The ISJ judgment reached in 2008 is not the solution to the basin water overdrafting. The county must take a stand by and placing a prohibition on development. Retrofit water meters installed need to be recorded as to their usage. Reduced water pumping to reduce pressure on the basin are all a must, not just a request. The water quality and quantity must be addressed for the protection of the citizens of Los Osos. The three major purveyors, S&T, CSD, and Golden State, are the three purveyors that must continue due diligence at all times. No one knows how long it will take for improvement in water quality and or quality. This is a continued condition that affects all the residents, not just those in the prohibition zone. Yet the prohibition zone is the one that is paying for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ben DeFada, followed by Josh Friedman.
Good morning. I'm away for 3 weeks, and I see your mugs on the paper already. Good morning, Chairman Patterson, Board, Sheriff, Public. No, I'm Ben DeFada from Mr. Gibson's 2nd District. You know his bankrupt little bedroom coastal community of Los Osos. For those in the audience, viewers and listeners, we five, six, seven people that have been showing up here week after week for five, 6 years, roasting Supervisor Gibson for wanting to build an overpriced, stinking, unaffordable, antiquated gravity collection sewer that several thousand property owners cannot afford. We are a compassionate group, not the disrespectful group the Tribune and others make us out to be. Mr. Gibson, our so-called representative, has not even looked at better and cheaper alternatives. Well, another year has gone by, and lots of flushes have gone down the drain since the days of Julius Caesar and Thomas Crapper, the inventor of today's toilet. From day one, it was gravity and only gravity for us, no matter what it costs. He eliminated all competition, never looking at better and cheaper alternatives. One alternative would save us $50 million compared to the $200 million gravity project. And the other alternative would save us $100 million of his $200 million gravity project. Where is our representative? Why, he's the one responsible for this mess. He made himself the judge and jury for this project instead of following the normal way of getting bids for this larger project. Gibson refuses to allow an affordability study of those that reside in a prohibition zone. Many that reside in the zone are stressed out physically, mentally, financially, along with...
Followed by Jeff Edwards.
Josh Friedman, freeslow.com. I'd like to remind you that the role of government is to protect the liberties of its citizens, not to provide people with things, not to give contracts to friends, and not to tell people how to live their lives. Tyranny's come in this county, and it's wrapped in environmentalism. It's still tyranny. As this county becomes more and more deindustrialized, people are going to rise in opposition to Agenda 21 and the UN takeover. So I'd like to urge you to stand with liberty this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Jeff Edwards, followed by Lindy Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Good morning, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a 35-year Los Osos resident. And this morning I wanted to direct your attention, and perhaps you read the Tribune on Saturday, front page article written by David Sneed entitled Los Osos Making Progress on Water. Rather compelling topic. And it appears Mr. Sneed has regurgitated information contained in a December 9, 2011 memorandum prepared by David Licaro of the Central Coast Regional Board, who, in essence, is echoing information that your Public Works Department has provided him concerning the situation in Los Osos. You know the expression, garbage in, garbage out. To quote the article, progress is being made to reverse the degradation of the Los Osos groundwater basin. Nothing could be further from the truth, gentlemen. In essence, we've traded a temporary nitrate problem for a permanent seawater intrusion problem. It's a disaster. And this is rapidly advancing seawater intrusion. Unlike Oceano, the seawater intrusion in Los Osos is real and has migrated to nearly the middle of the community. In the lower Paso Robles formation, which is where we derive our primary, which is our primary drinking water supply. But our savior is coming from the Basin Management Plan, soon to be released, prepared by the ISJ. I've seen a preview of this Basin Management Plan, and several of the components are shift reliance from the lower basin to the upper basin, which contains septic returns. The ag and urban reuse plan, that's going to be a key element, which we know those are dead on arrival. And, of course, conservation, which, okay, we all support conservation. A critical omission is a seasonal release in the summertime in Los Osos Creek, where the lower basin surfaces. The Los Osos wastewater project, as planned, fails to address seawater intrusion to any significant degree. Reduced demand is not enough when nitrate removal and changes in pumping management don't work. Balancing the basin is not going to happen with this plan. If the public listens to the TRIB, they're going to be in for a rude awakening when they realize that they're not only going to have to pay for a $200 million wastewater project, but also pay another $30 million for imported water. The basin management plan is inadequate. And I'm hopeful that we can make amendments to it to really address the problems at hand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Lindy Owen, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning again. Lindy Owen from the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos. Just to continue on, I brought that article, too. I was pretty saddened to see this being called news because it certainly is totally not. But Licaro does make an interesting statement, and this is our point sometimes when we come here week after week. No one is willing to speculate on when improvements in water quality will be realized, however. With groundwater, we never know. It's a tough call. We know that it's not being addressed in Los Osos. The sewer is going to make it worse. This proposal that is to pull all the water out and do it the way that it's being proposed. I wanted to say there was another article in the Trib that was interesting, saying that 2011 had the most extreme weather and climate disasters in history, causing $50 billion in damages nationally. There are typically three or four U.S. weather-related disasters that cost more than $1 billion each, but this time there were 12. They will exponentially be increasing as climate change progresses. So back to our county and local concerns. This project that is the $200 million, $200 plus, whatever, believe me, it will be $250 by the time the bids come in. But this project runs full bore ahead with no concerns, addressing that it is the most expensive public works project ever proposed for this county, as well as the most expensive. So you're putting us in danger, as well as costing us way more than we ever should have cost. Mr. Gibson, could you please tell us where the magic water is coming from for the empty undeveloped lots to add into the paying for the cost of this sewer? You keep saying it's conservation. I say it's Nacimiento. You need to be straightforward and honest with our community.
Richard Margetson, followed by Stuart Robinson.
Richard Margetson. On December 13th, you had an agenda item for Los Osos dealing with a contract for project management of the wastewater project. After public comment, the usual statement from Mr. Gibson came forth, and I'm going to read it. I have a transcript of everything that was said after public comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, listening to public comment today, much of what we heard in public comment really isn't relevant to the specific decision before us in this contract. And a good fraction of that comment was incorrect in one fashion or another. I don't think it's needed to carry on the rectification of that. Well, Mr. Gibson keeps using that statement, so I guess we're going to have to rectify some of the comments Mr. Gibson has made over the last few years. Later on in your deliberations, Mr. Gibson said this: the whole attempt to divert attention toward nitrates in the water supply is also a bit of a canard. The State Water Board, the Regional Water Board, actually made it very clear they have solid evidence of the fact that septic tanks pollute the groundwater of the Los Osos groundwater basin. Whether nitrate levels are at one level or another, pollution is still occurring, and there is no right to pollute the groundwater. So the question of whether the treatment of nitrates is an issue is absolutely irrelevant. Well, I think the Regional Water Quality Control Board will be very interested in that comment, because in your recycled water management plan that you submitted to the Coastal Commission in November of this year, in your historical context for this document, it says, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, Central Coast Region, determined in 1983 that the nitrate contamination in excess of state standards had occurred in the groundwater basin, at least partially due to the use of septic systems throughout the community. That was the reason for the wastewater project, gentlemen, and the moratorium. And there's a prohibition zone in Los Osos. Mr. Gibson says there is no right to pollute the groundwater. But Mr. Gibson hasn't taken a stand that within that prohibition zone, there's a little magic kingdom called the Martin Tract. At a lower elevation than thousands of homes in that community, that is exempt from the wastewater project because they sit on half acre or larger parcels. So it's all right to pollute the groundwater if you're on a bigger parcel, but it's not all right to pollute the groundwater if you're on a smaller parcel. So which is it, Mr. Gibson? Can you pollute in Los Osos, or can you not pollute? Can you collectively not pollute, or can you collectively pollute? You can't have it both ways. There's pollution in Los Osos, but everybody should be responsible.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Stuart Robinson, followed by Laura Mordaunt.
Hi, my name is Stuart Robinson. I'm a rural Aurora Grande resident and a board member of the Oak Park Community Group. I'm here to oppose the Los Robles del Mar annexation, which is coming before LAFCO, I believe, next week. I'd like to start by thanking David Church and the LAFCO staff for finally listening to us. It's hard speaking to Pismo Beach. They don't really take our comments seriously, but David has done a very good job, and there's some very good mitigations proposed with this project. I think we feel that his mitigations will protect our local aquifer from being pumped by Los Robles del Mar. But the Oak Park Community Group's charter is a little bit broader. We're more interested in educating for countywide water issues, and that's the end I'd like to speak to this morning. 4 years ago, Kevin Rice stood in front of the LAFCO board and told them point blank that there wasn't an adequate water supply at the time to service both their existing city build-out and the Los Robles del Mar project. So here we are 4 years later. What's changed? Well, what's changed is the developers filed a lawsuit against the city, so that's one big change, for not serving water to this development. Secondly, the city of Pismo Beach has transferred 100 acre feet of water from the left pocket to the right pocket. I mean, this is water that they've had all along that they're now saying they'll allocate to this new Los Robles del Mar development, but it's water they've always had. The last thing, which is the most critical thing, we believe in. So our take is that it just doesn't make sense that they come in now and say they've got 100 acre feet of water to service this new development, yet if you look at the numbers, they're really 500 acre feet short from what they project in the Urban Water Management Plan. I have a copy of a letter here I'd like to give you that sort of summarizes in more detail my points. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Laura Mordaunt.
Hi, I'm Laura Mordaunt. I live in San Luis Obispo, and water is a big concern for all of us. And when it doesn't affect us, I'm not Los Osos. I don't have these issues. Yet it came, excuse me, the problem came up for me. And when it does come up for you, it changes you. It changes you how you look at things. And I'm suspecting that if everyone on the board here were to have been as affected as these citizens are, you might look at it a little differently. But that wasn't what I wanted to talk about. It does affect Los Osos. Golden State Water has doubled our rates already. We are paying twice for the cost of water as a neighbor who might live on Tank Farm Road off of there. And so there are around 400-plus homes in San Luis Obispo and about 2,900 in Los Osos that are affected by this. And I know Mr. Gibson attended the PUC meeting. But what I'm here to say is, for those who aren't here and might listen to this, that you really need to become serious about it. There are other – I'm asking you to – what can we do when you move into a neighborhood and when you don't know, you don't really ask the question, does a private company own your water rights? Are they the ones who are going to dispense water to you? And then for profit, they can raise the cost of water to the point where some of the homeowners will have to leave. And I don't know if that is appropriate for the county to be concerned about, but I'm in the county. That's why it affects me. And my neighbors 2 miles away pay maybe 1/4 for the same amount of water that I do. And those in Los Osos are already strapped with the other things that these citizens have brought to your attention, let alone Golden State, for I don't know if it's 1/3 of Los Osos is affected by this huge increase by Golden State. So some of us have been trying to look at taking it over. What words of advice could you give us? And this is very hard to get people's attention because they don't like it. Ojai is in the middle of doing it. Felton, Flo has done it. Dublin has completed this process and have taken it over and made it public again. Water is a right. It's not a monopoly, and that's our problem. So we need your help as citizens because that's an overburden in addition for Los Osos besides the sewer issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mordaunt. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that's the end of your request to speak.
That is.
I will
close public comment, but I know you wanted to follow up.
And with that, thank you. I just, first of all, in response to Ms. Mordaunt, that the rate increase proposed by Golden State is a particular concern to me, especially as it does affect Los Osos, which will have significant financial challenges moving forward with the wastewater project. And we are tracking the action through the PUC. As to the actions in other parts of the Golden State Service District, I'll be looking into that. But as of right now, I'm on the record with asking them to justify exactly why they are raising rates and to simplify the way in which they account for water usage in different parts of simply this county. My purpose this morning, though, and thanking the chair, is just to make an announcement regarding the wastewater project. As the project does move forward, we are in the planning stages to try to deal with the road situation in Los Osos. As you can imagine, 45 miles of pipes being installed in the streets is going to cause a significant amount of disruption. But it also provides an opportunity to do some work that has been long put off in Los Osos. So the public works team that's working on the wastewater project is starting this evening conducting a series of open houses to get the community informed about opportunities as well as some of the challenges, to answer questions and to get set up for. And with that, I thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson, for that announcement. And I would like to take just a moment to share some information I just received from Jerry Rio, who is the Executive Director of the Housing Authority here in San Luis Obispo County. I do intend to adjourn for a short break after this, and we have two hearing items that we'll come back for after our break, and then we'll adjourn to closed session. There is no afternoon session of the board today, so I wanted everyone to know that. All of you are probably familiar with the demise, if you will, of the redevelopment agencies. The California Supreme Court struck that down in late December by allowing legislation that was passed by the legislature. But as so often happens, there's unintended consequences. And there may be something that we can do about that, and that's why I want to share this information with you, because it's very significant to San Luis Obispo County. And I'm going to read in part from the email that Mr. Rio sent to me. The governor's original proposal to kill redevelopment agencies included a provision to preserve any unspent housing set-aside funds. Unfortunately, this provision was not included in the final legislation. This would not have been an issue if the Supreme Court had ruled that RDAs could be resurrected. However, due to the Supreme Court ruling, roughly $1.3 billion in housing funds statewide will be lost. Now, Senator Steinberg recently modified his bill, SB 654, to address this concern. That bill is coming this afternoon before the Senate Transportation and Housing Committee. And if they are able to repair that legislation, then that $1.3 billion could hopefully be utilized for housing. In San Luis Obispo County, that represents about $7 million to redevelopment agencies in this county, and translates to about 200 housing units. So what Mr. Rio has asked us to do, and what I want to share with you, is to call Sacramento, call the Senate Transportation and Housing Committee, and tell them that you support a revision of the resolution of the legislation to restore that $1.3 billion in housing. And the number you call is here somewhere. It's a long email, so I have to sort that out. He did give that to me. I did ask for that. Again, the Senate Transportation and Housing, they meet at 1:30 p.m., and you can phone Jerry Rio to get additional information at 543-5970. And I believe I have information on the committee in Sacramento. That number is 916-651-4121. Again, 916-651-4121. Call in support of amending the legislation to preserve this $1.3 billion in housing funds statewide. So with that, I'll take a break. We'll reconvene at, let's say, 10:50. Just a short break.
8 minutes?
8 minutes. Thank you. This next item is number 19, a hearing to consider protest to an ordinance establishing a water service rate for San Luis Obispo County Service Area 10A, Cayucas, and adoption of the ordinance if no majority protests exist. At this point, Madam Clerk, how many valid protests has the clerk?
Within CSA 10A. This was inadvertently left out of your board package, and so we're asking the clerk to introduce it into the record at this time. With that being said, I'm going to go ahead and proceed on to the outline for today's presentation. We'll be discussing the water system needs in 10A, proposed water system improvements, project costs, proposed rate increase to cover those costs, timing for the various projects that we'll be looking at, our discussions with the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council, rate comparisons between CSA 10A and the two private water companies in Cayucas, the Proposition 218 process, and then be available for questions from your board. A bit of a background, CSA 10A has existing deteriorated and undersized water lines. Some of those water lines are over 50 to 60 years old. In addition, we have the sole existing water tank there that's also I think it's also on the order of 50 to 60 years old and currently has inadequate storage. When I refer to inadequate storage, this comes back to California Fire Code flow requirements and American Water Works Association storage standards. California Fire Code requires that in residential areas, we need to have minimum flows of 1,000 gallons a minute at 20 pounds per square inch. At this time, the system cannot produce those minimum flows in all areas. In addition, we do not have adequate storage to meet fire flows, and the standard for that is 1,000 gallons per minute for 2 hours, which equates to 120,000 gallons. The next slide shows you the existing water distribution system. The lines that are colored in green actually do meet the 1,000 gallons per minute flow. The other lines do not. We can go ahead. For storage requirements, American Water Works Association standards require three storage components. The first is what we call equalization or operations needs, and that's for normal daily use. And in Cayucas and 10A, that would be 78,000 gallons. For fire requirements, we need 2 hours of continuous flow, as I mentioned previously, which would be 120,000 gallons. And then for other emergencies, such as if the water treatment plant that treats the raw water that we provide to 10A, if that were to fail, we need to have 3 days of normal use. So as you can see down at the bottom left, the required storage in total is 486,000 gallons. Looking over to your right, you can see that our existing storage is 287,000 gallons. So in all, we've got about 199,000 gallons in deficit at this point in time. This slide is just an aerial showing you where the water tank site is for the existing tank, and it's up in the upper right-hand corner. Over on the left side, you can see the intersection of Highway 1 and Ocean Boulevard with Old Creek Road. The next slide shows, the next two slides actually show pictures of the existing water tank. Go ahead on to the next one, please, Tom. And this tank has actually been repainted on the exterior just within the last year or so. So, proposed improvements. Replace and upsize our deteriorated and substandard water lines and wharf heads. The wharf heads are small fire hydrants that only have a 2.5-inch port on them. Standard hydrants have two of those plus a 4-inch port. Water line upgrades in Shear Avenue, Richard Avenue, and Stewart Avenue. In addition to those water lines being fairly old, they are also only 4 inches in diameter, and they need to be upsized to 8-inch lines at a minimum. So these improvements will provide minimum fire flows to most of the system. The second project is to rehabilitate the existing water tank. The interior of that needs to be recoated, and in addition, the roof on it needs to be replaced. And our third project is to develop a new storage tank to provide adequate fire storage. This plan shows the water lines that we need to upgrade. As you can see, Shearer Avenue from its entire length, and then also at the intersection of where Richard and Stewart Avenues cross. Those are all older and substandard lines. So, project costs and rate increases. If we look at the left-hand column under project, the first one is rehabilitation of the existing tank and water line replacement. The total cost for that is $1.62 million. It would take an annual revenues of $100,000 to pay for that, and this translates to a monthly increase to 10A customers of $11.04 a month. Underneath that is the next line item is a new tank, the 200,000-gallon tank, or ongoing infrastructure repair replacement program, and I'll address that in a moment. Total cost is $1.1 million annually, so that's why that's included. Okay, Tom. Proposed improvements are, this slide breaks down how this will actually affect our customers. And the current bi-monthly rate, what our customers are paying right now, is every 2 months they pay $80.47, and this is on our base rate, which translates to $40.24 a month. The proposed bi-monthly rate increase, the next line down, is $35.33 every 2 months, or $17.67 per month. So the bottom line is that every 2 months the customers would see $115.80, or on a monthly basis, it would be $57.90. Okay, and for project timing. So we're looking at constructing these as three separate projects, with the first being waterline replacement and upsizing. At this point, we would anticipate, provided your board approves the rate increase today, and there's barring a majority protest, we anticipate starting in January of 2013 and completion of June of that year for the waterline replacements. Construction of the new tank would then begin, and we're looking at January of 2014 with completion in July of that year. Once the new tank is constructed, then we can go ahead and start on rehabilitating the existing tank. And we would anticipate beginning that in July of 2014 and completion in November of that year. The reason we're sequencing these projects like this is that once we have the new tank constructed, we can then take the existing tank offline and drain it and go ahead and do all the rehabilitation work that's needed. If we don't have the new tank in before we go to rehabilitate the existing tank, then we're going to pay something on the order of $90,000 to have temporary tanking put on the hill up next to the existing tank. So we see this as a benefit to go ahead and construct the new tank first and then do the rehabilitation on the existing tank. Okay. Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council, as Mr. Gibson knows, we meet regularly with them. They have representatives from the entire community of Cayucas. We started discussions with the council back in September of 2009 with this particular emphasis, looking at fire flow standards and fire needs for the community. We proceeded with those discussions over a period of time, and then on November, this last November 22nd, your board set the hearing date for today. And on the same day, all notices were mailed out to all CSA 10A property owners and tenants. And that was 950 property owners and I believe about 127 tenants. On December 7th, we made a presentation to the Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council, and presenters there included Tom Trott, who's down front and center, members of our accounting division, Will Clemens and Pam Duffield, and my supervisor, Dean Benedicts. On January 4th, I went back to the council, and at that time, after some lengthy discussion, they voted to support the proposed project at 11-0. So one of the questions posed by the Cayucas Council was, is how do our water rates compare with the two privates in the community, Mohawk Mutual and Paso Robles Beach? When we discussed those on January 4th, we indicated that our rates for 10A are significantly lower than those for the other two purveyors. However, subsequent reanalysis indicated that the initial rate figures were somewhat erroneous and that 10A rates are actually more comparable to the rates for their other purveyors. So I've got two slides with three different rate comparisons following next to show and illustrate what the current rates in Cayucas are. If you look at this graph, this is based on bi-monthly water rates for the three companies, and looking down at the lower left, you'll see that for the minimum users, 0 to 14 units of water, currently CSA 10A is charging less than both of the two privates. With the rate increase, which is the yellow or magenta color there, we would be charging more than Mohawk Mutual, but less than Paso Robles Beach. As water consumption increases and you get into those folks who are using 20-some units, then the amounts go up and CSA 10A is almost comparable to what Paso Robles Beach Water Association is charging. And then for those folks who use 25 units or more, and that's about 10% of our customers, the rates would go up to where we would be in excess of both Mohawk Mutual and Paso Robles Beach. So. And then this next slide just shows the same figures or the same bars, and this is just based on monthly rates. It's just translating it. You know, we would like to mention that conducting a rate comparison like this is almost in a way like comparing apples to oranges, because there are each water system, whether you're dealing with the ones in Cayucas or elsewhere in the county or community, has its own minimum 45-day protest period, which we have met and exceeded. The notice that was just added into your board package as we started was also mailed on November 22nd at the conclusion of your meeting on that date. And as the clerk mentioned, we've gotten some 30 protests, which is approximately 3%. So we're to our hearing today to adopt the rate ordinance. Staff recommendations are that upon conclusion of the hearing, did your board determine whether there is a majority protest to the proposed water rate ordinance? And provided there is not a majority protest, that your board adopt the attached ordinance which establishes the rates for County Service Area Number 10, 10A Water System. With that, I conclude my report, and I'm available for questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bird. I do see a question here from Supervisor Meacham.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I have just two questions. One, regarding CSA 10, does that water fund have a reserve? And is there a required percentage of reserve of that CSA?
My understanding and our accounting staff can clarify if I'm off base, but that we like to keep about 50% of our operations and maintenance budget in reserve, and at this time we're something less than that.
So there's nothing that is, I guess, held in reserve for future maintenance and our deferred maintenance?
Well, ongoing day-to-day type of maintenance is in our operating budget.
Okay. I guess because the question goes more to Let's take the first one where it says rehabilitation of existing tank and waterline replacement. Once that's completed, then why would there be an ongoing cost relative to the water rate unless you have allocated that to something?
I'm sorry, I'm not...
Well, I understand the new tank and the ongoing infrastructure repair and replacement program, and you're going to be charging $6.63 per month. But the rehabilitation of the existing tank and waterline replacement, once that's completed, why would there be an ongoing cost to that?
If we could defer to Mr. Clemens. Thank you.
Will Clemens with your Public Works Department. So the annual cost of that is to repay a loan to the USDA, and maybe that's what Doug forgot to mention, was that these projects, $2.6 million worth of infrastructure project, will be funded with a loan. We don't have $2.6 million in reserves to do these projects, so we take out a loan, and then that's the annual amount to pay the debt service on the loan.
Okay. I think that would be important to note in there.
My apology. Yes, it is a 40-year loan at low interest. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Teixeira.
Thank you, Chairman Patterson. I've just got a couple questions. The first one being, when we look at this schedule, proposed project approach, they're looking to start the construction of the new tank in the dead of winter, January 2014. I would think that if we could start it earlier, like probably in July or August after the water line's done, that we'd be better off. I know we've got good weather this year, but usually that's the middle of winter and it's raining and you're going to have delayed days and problems getting access into the area where the tank's going to be. So that would just be a question and or recommendation on that. And then the other one would be, we're looking at putting an additional tank in that's going to cover the need for now. What's going to happen down the road if Cal Fire or one of the other agencies comes back and says we need more water, we need to cover this? Wouldn't it be prudent to look at a tank that's larger, possibly 250,000 or 300,000 gallons, to have that cushion to be able to use, so we're not coming back in 3 to 5 years and saying, well, we need to build another one or do something different? That's all I've got.
Thank you. With regard to the first part of your question, whenever we enter into a construction project, we always do take into consideration what time of the year it is and what sort of weather conditions we'll be looking at, and so we will take that under advisement. Thank you. With regard to the second part of your question, excuse me, I'm sorry, could you just briefly...
The size of the tank, we're sizing it barely to cover the needed amount now, as in nothing in the future.
Yes, thank you. We've had a lot of discussion with the Cayuga Citizens Advisory Council, and there's been a lot of concern about the level of the rate increase. And so we wanted to at least come in with something that will meet current standards at this point in time, which we feel that... Well, we know that this proposed tank will do that.
If I could add to that, the sizing of the tank, as I understand it, and it's been explained to the community, is for the build-out within the area of CSA 10A. Cayucas is almost all built.
Members of the public may make oral statements regarding this item, but oral protests will not be counted in determining whether there has been a 50% protest to the proposed rates. Each speaker will be allowed 3 minutes, and I do have one request to speak, and that is Carol Gunther.
Thank you, and thank you all for all the work and all the good listening you do for the people in San Luis Obispo County. Can't be an easy job. I live on Ocean Boulevard in one of the affected areas, and I would just like to speak to this measure. Living in this area since 1969, it's understandable that the cost of living has risen. It seems, though, that lately the cost of living has gone up at rapid rates. When we first moved to our current home in Cayucas in 1989, our bimonthly water bill was $30. That cost has now risen to an average of $130, and with the new proposal approved, it will go up to $166. Sewer bills for us originally were $20 bimonthly. Now they are $104 bimonthly, or $52 a month, and heaven only knows what that cost is going to be when the new sewer treatment plant is put in for Morro Bay and Cayucas. My husband and I are recently retired school teachers, and we're quickly learning what a fixed income feels like. It's a little bit scary. No more raises, no possibility for a greater income in the future, and yet we see our cost of living going up and up and up. We're not out-of-town investors like a lot of people in a lot of property owners in Cayucas are now. We're not second homeowners, or are we in the vacation rental business. We just simply wish to live in our home. I've spoken with many of my elderly neighbors who have been here long before myself, and their fixed income levels are almost at poverty level. What do they do? Do they take out a reverse mortgage to keep up with the continued rises in utilities in Cayucas? Some express that worry. We love this small town, but can we afford to stay? So I ask these questions. I appreciate all the information, Mr. Byrd, but I was wondering if we didn't have the required 50% plus for the protest, where would the money come from? Because we need this, obviously. I'm convinced of that. And then another thing, when we did receive this notice, I think you said it was November 22nd. It was a busy time of the year, and I know a lot of my friends said, oh, I didn't write my letter yet. Oh, I haven't done anything yet. And then as we did write our letter, we kind of looked through and went, okay, now where do we send this, and what do we have to have on it? It was a little confusing. And I was wondering if the advisory council had brought up maybe having an actual ballot for this, or a simple postcard sent in to with a yay or nay. I didn't know if we could do it a simpler way. Anyway, I understand the need. I don't know if there's an alternative way, like grant money or something of that nature, or another way to collect the vote. Because I would bet out of 1,000 people, there's a lot more than 30 people that can't afford this. So if you could address those questions, I'd appreciate it.
Very good, Mrs. Gunther. Thank you. Would someone from Public Works staff or Mr. Byrd, would you like to speak to her concerns?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding another method for notification, you know, the requirement under Proposition 218 is that we do provide these notices, and they go out to all of the individuals in the community. I think under the, you know, we have gone ahead and done that. We did try to get those out. Well, we did actually send those out on November 22nd as soon as the item had been approved by your board. With regard to the possibility of grant money, whenever we make application to a lending firm such as the USDA or organization, we do ask that they review the community's financial status to see if there is any possibility for any kind of grant money. And this is also part of the reason why we're looking at USDA versus State Health Department. State Health, typically you're looking at a 30-year loan. This we're looking at a 40-year loan with a relatively low interest rate, somewhere in the 3 to 4% range. And it was felt that that would be most advantageous in keeping the monthly additional cost to the customers down.
Okay. So you have actually investigated grant opportunities through USDA?
We will be discussing that with them as we proceed. And my understanding is we now have a USDA representative in the county who's dealing with a small project in Los Osos at this time, but is also available for us to contact.
Same process. Before I close public hearing, I will offer one final opportunity for anyone to submit a written protest. Once the hearing is closed, no more written protests may be submitted. And seeing no one coming forward, the time for submission of protests is now officially closed. Madam Clerk, would you are you able to determine the number of protests?
Yes.
Okay. And What is the number of valid protests that were submitted?
30.
Okay. Which represents approximately 3% of the total. Okay. And with that, I need a motion determining the number and percentage of protests.
Mr. Chairman, I will move that we find that 30 protests have been lodged and that that does not constitute a majority protest of this proceeding.
Okay. Second.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. And therefore, based on the absence of a 50% protest, the board will now proceed to deliberate on adoption of the proposed ordinance. So, any additional concerns or questions?
Would council like that motion passed before and separate motion on the ordinance then?
Yes.
Okay. So, we'll call the question on that motion.
So
Madam Clerk?
Roll call on that.
Oh, so it was one motion.
We're going to make a second one here.
Oh, I got it. Sorry.
That was validating that there were less than 50%.
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Okay. Yes. And now,
thank you, Mr.
Moving
Chairman.
Forward with the adoption of the ordinance.
I will be making that motion in just a moment. I do want to thank Ms. Gunther for coming down. I certainly sympathize with your concerns on behalf of yourselves and others on fixed income. I know that especially those on fixed income find the rising cost of living problematic. And I certainly will work with our Public Works Department to make sure we get the best financing possible and the greatest amount of grant funding should any be available for this. We will certainly do this. While nobody likes to pay more, the reality is that in many of our communities we have aging infrastructure. And in particular in Cayucas, I think the project that's before us today, the assessment rates and charges, the project that this rates and charges ordinance is being modified to fund is quite well thought out and absolutely needed. If you consider the density of Cayucas, the age of the buildings, the weather patterns, the fire threat there is considerable, and we've known for some time about the inadequacies of our water flow. So I'd like to thank staff for their care and thoughtfulness and patience with this. They have had extensive discussions with the community through the advisory council. They've answered all the questions that have been put forward in a very professional manner, and I think it's really been a model of the interaction between a county government and a community. I'd like, speaking to that as well, I'd like to thank the advisory council, Chairman John Carcel, the members, and all those who have participated for a strikingly civil conversation of something that was not a slam dunk by any means. And since we have passed the previous motion finding no majority protest, I will therefore make a motion that we adopt the attached ordinance and waive the reading.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the ordinance and waive the reading. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you again, staff and the community. And Ms. Gunther, always welcome to contact me as we go through the process if you have other questions or concerns.
Okay. Well, we have a changing of the staff here. I'll ask the clerk to read the final hearing item of the day.
Item number 20, a hearing to consider a resolution of necessity for the acquisition of the real property interest required by BSR, a general partnership for the Los Osos Wastewater Project, WBS number 300448.
Thank you. And our staff presentation, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Phil Acosta, right-of-way agent with the Department of Public Works. Members of the board, good morning. We have a hearing this morning for a resolution of necessity, and we have a PowerPoint. Also have support here this morning from Mr. Fred Andrews and Mr. John Waddell, our project manager. Our PowerPoint will basically cover the hearing issues on this hearing, and then specifically whether or not the subject property is necessary for this public project. and whether or not the offer required under Government Code 7267.2 has been made to the owner. And for this morning, we will receive comments from the staff, take testimony from the property owner or their representative, and consider all the evidence to support whether or not the subject property is necessary for the public project. And I am not aware that the owners are present this morning, and it is my understanding that they were not going to be here. And then also confirm that the statutory offer has been made to the property owner, and then hopefully adopt the resolution of necessity by a four-fifths vote.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Acosta. Any questions from the board? Seeing none, I will open it to public comment, and I have a number of requests to speak, beginning with Eric Greening, followed by Julie Tacker.
I'm Eric Greening, and one of the findings you are required to make is that this project, the whole project, is planned or located consistent with the greatest public good and the least private injury. And it is stated that this has been established for the project as a whole, but I am not clear of whether or when your board ever made that specific finding for the project as a whole. You've had a lot of updates about this. You've had a lot of various action items. You've improved an EIR, but to actually make the case that this particular design, this particular implementation, is the project consistent with the greatest public good and the least private injury, could someone point to a date or a record when that particular finding was made, such that it can't at this point be challenged by any future property owner? I'm not sure that the alternatives analysis that would lead to that has been documented. And, of course, a particular concern that I know the RAC is going to get a report on March 7th is the compatibility of a low gradient gravity system with a conservation plan we haven't yet seen, but that would presumably minimize the amount of fluid moving through the system with the potential of very significant private injury in the event that collectively the groundwater is imperiled by the need to flush a gravity system with scarce water. So that's just one issue, but when or where has this finding been collectively made, or will it be made? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Tacker, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning again. I am Julie Tacker from Los Osos, and this proceeding begs the question, where are we with the Giacomazzi property? That's a big piece of property, and that's something that's very necessary to the project, and I would expect that we'd be seeing something like that for that property, like this, for that property in some fashion. And if we're in such a hurry, why isn't that here before you today? I provided you an aerial photograph of this parcel, because your public works staff does not. Throughout the exhibits and attachments in your staff report, it's drawings, it's very obscure what they're asking for. And the reason that I provided the aerial photograph is I wanted to give you some bearings to where this property is and what exactly we're talking about. There's two shades of green in your photograph. The darker shade, the larger amount of green, is a sensitive resource area. It's a wetland. I went to the EIR because I wanted to read the biology related to this site. It's not there, gentlemen. I've been out to this area recently, and since the Los Osos Wastewater Project was also going to use this property, there has been considerable growth of habitat in that area. I'd like to see the biology on this. I hear $113 a month in compensation.
Thank you, Ms.
That's
Packer.
Ridiculous, gentlemen.
Gwen Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning, Gwen Taylor again. To carry on a little bit from what Ms. Tacker just said, that site was proposed for development many years ago. It was taken to the Coastal Commission and denied any kind of development in a residential as a residential area. The site is not a site that you are going to be able to go in, develop a pump station without getting into the wetlands. That site has high groundwater. This is the second site that you have already determined that you are going to put a pump station on that has high groundwater. It is unfortunate that the question has been posed to Supervisor Gibson and one of his team as to whether the Jacamazi property, as mentioned before, has even been approached and obtained a written agreement from the property owner that they will sell. Are we going to have to go through another eminent domain? Because somewhere along the line, the team did not keep up with the responsibility of having all of the sites available. You have the money. You've been voting money like a drunken sailor, yes, a drunken sailor, and you have been using it. Why not make sure that you have all the necessary property before you begin a development where we, the community of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone, have already begun to pay, and pay dearly? This is not something that we can go out every year and just flip our fingers and get more money. As has been said, the cost of living is increasing dramatically. Just living has increased dramatically financially. Why can you not have your team, as Mr. Gibson continues to promote, go out and make sure that you have the necessary property before you go forth with the design of the sewer project? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Lindy Owen.
Lindy Owen from the Prohibition Zone. I am pretty concerned about the process. Just more bad on this sewer. It is so, it's not like this is a new project. It's the same project, rehashed. It was supposedly already ready to go get, you know, government funding, shovel ready. Why was this property not purchased? The timeliness of the project management is very disturbing because, for instance, we don't own the Giacomazzi property yet. We're supposed to be breaking ground sometime in June or gosh knows. We haven't had the conditions to the Coastal Commission met. We haven't even had the USDA completely given. It is not completely approved yet either. So everything is just chaotic in this. If you're going to do eminent domain, you might as well start the process for the Giacomazzi property too, because they're not willing. You're not willing to offer them enough money, and they're not willing sellers. This property is in a very sensitive area. The whole thing would be avoided if we were putting in a step collection system. The flexible pipe does not require a lift station. It does not require any lift stations. It does not go into sensitive habitat. It does not go into shallow groundwater and try to go down 8 feet to put a pump that is liable to break and spill. If you look at where the spills come from, they come from lift stations along the coast. So we are asking for penalties from the Regional Water Quality Control Board throughout this whole process by designing this kind of collection system. I say it's not too late, because if you just start adding it all up, you sit there and go, who in their right mind would allow this kind of collection system to be installed in an earthquake zone on a sand dune? Tearing up every street wouldn't be necessary if you were looking at the step collection system. They put them in other modern cities. There's just a problem here because we've got too many old boys. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. That was my last request to speak, so I will close it to public comment. I see a request from staff to speak. Mr. Acosta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I can address some of the concerns here that have been raised. We did have our PowerPoint presentation slightly abbreviated, so if we can complete the presentation, I think that will answer some of the concerns. And then if for the project are a portion of open space and planting easement, 0.22 acres, a part of that will overlie the existing open space easement that was granted as a requirement for their previous project or their previous improvements to the property. And we do have a declaration in our resolution under Code of Civil Procedure, Section 1240.510, the proposed use of those certain parcels of land described in Exhibit A, and that would include the green open space areas, will not unreasonably interfere with or impair the continuance of any public use as it now exists or may reasonably be expected to exist in the future. This is intended to show that we do not intend to conflict with the previous open space easement. In fact, we intend to kind of complement it. The habitat management plan will address how these new open space easements are to be used as in fulfilling our requirements under the coastal development permit for the project. So, anyway, just to complete our presentation regarding this specific property, we also require a permanent easement for the pump station. If you can see the arrow there, 0.09 of an acre. And then also a temporary construction easement in the red hashed area, 0.14 of an acre. And again, that will be just for temporary use, and it does encompass or go around an area that was previously acquired by the district. The negotiations with the property owners continue. We've had very promising negotiations and close to settlement at times, and I would say they continue to be very promising at this point. But in order to assure that our project schedule is able to be maintained, we request the resolution of necessity. And then I mentioned the 1240.510 of Code of Civil Procedure already. So the next panel would just encompass our recommendations. We recommend that the board affirm the public interest and necessity require the project, and affirm that the project is planned or located in the manner compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury as to this parcel, and affirm that the subject property is necessary for the public project, and affirm that the offer required under Government Code 7267.2 has been made to the owner. And I believe I mentioned that, may have overlooked it in the previous panel. The county's offer, in accordance with Government Code 7267.2, was made, dated October 14, 2011, to the property owners. Also, I'd like to note for the record that the property owners were duly notified of this hearing, and we also confirmed by telephone that they were aware, and they were notified in writing November 30, 2011. So we recommend that the board adopt this resolution of necessity by 4/5 vote, having met these requirements. If I may address some of the previous comments.
Yes, please do.
Okay. Before moving ahead on the project, the Public Works Right-of-Way Department is required to submit a right-of-way certification to USDA and to any other funding entities that wish to be made aware. And we've already drafted our right-of-way certification, and we're in very good shape to deliver it on time in mid-February. And so there are requirements for us to formally declare that we control or have the necessary control over the properties required for the project before we can initiate construction. So those protections are in place, and we are in very good condition to comply with those. Any other questions?
Yeah. Any questions?
I have.
Of staff?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Meacham has a question, yes.
Did we answer Mr. Greening's question?
And I would have to say that's with our project manager, Mr. Waddell.
Good morning, board members. I'm John Waddell, the project manager for the Los Sosos Wastewater Project. And if my notes are correct, Mr. Greening's question was related to some of the specific findings in the resolution and actually the last slides that Mr. Acosta had put up regarding the planning and location of the proposed project compatible with public good and least private injury, and then the public interest and necessity that would require this specific property. Is that what you were referring to?
I think that's what
okay.
you're asking.
So, you know, on for the, you know, this, the environmental process, the CEQA process, the alternatives review, reviewed, you know, a range of alternatives and projects and went through, you know, our planning commission, your boards, and the coastal, and with the related coastal permit also through the coastal commission. And so that
is made the determination of necessity here. So just wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Meacham. Supervisor Gibbons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as Mr. Meacham's familiar, as we've gone through this on Nacimiento, this is a process that allows negotiation to continue on price, which is the only basic thing here. I just, in responding to public comment, a number of commenters were suggesting this isn't an appropriate place for a pump station. I'd point out that that's not really relevant because we do have a permit that permits a pump station at this location. And if Mr. Andrews could put back the slide that has the necessary findings on it, I want to just, for the record, walk through the basis for by which we can make these findings, and then I'll be prepared with a motion. I'm going to start from the bottom up. It's the testimony of Mr. Acosta that he has made the required offer under Government Code 7267.2. Number three, Mr. Waddell just testified to the necessity of the pump station at that particular place. So this particular property is necessary for the project. In number two, Mr. Waddell also referenced the extensive public hearings, CDP issued by the Coastal Commission, the certification of the environmental impact report, which showed that the project had to produce the least impact to the area of Los Osos. So I do believe that all of that material is relevant to making finding number two. And finding number one in terms of the public interest and this necessity of the project, I think, is well supported by the Regional Water Quality Control Board's various resolutions and actions on this, the legislation AB 2701 in the previous hearings. So I'm comfortable that we are on solid ground making each of those findings with a solid record, and as such, I will move that we adopt the proposed resolution of necessity.
Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the resolution of necessity. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira?
Yes.
And Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is closed session. I'll open this to the public. There are no requests to speak, and so, Mr. Jensen, if you can give us an estimate of the time for closed session.
About 45 minutes.
Okay, and after closed session, we'll come down, report out of closed session, and that will conclude our board meeting today. All right. We will reconvene public session from closed session and a report out. Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board did meet in closed session. There was one item that requires a report. Under the category of threatened litigation, the board considered a claim for damages that had been submitted by Bradford C. Stahl and Piranha Propellers, LLC. The board took final action today in closed session and approved by a 5-0 vote a settlement with the claimants. Pursuant to the settlement agreement, the county is agreeing to purchase from Mr. Stahl a personal property located near the San Luis Obispo Regional Airport for $350,000. In 2011, the property was appraised for $471,000. The board directed the chairperson to sign the settlement agreement, purchase and sale agreement, certificate of acceptance, and any other documents necessary to finalize escrow. That's the end of the report.
Very good. Thank you. And with that, we'll adjourn today's meeting and reconvene 9 a.m. January 17th.